never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meetrejoin.com. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy is an incredible tool for facing your fears and finding ways to overcome them. For me, I'm always nervous about the unknown. But sometimes the scariest thing is not facing our fears in the first place and holding ourselves back. For me, therapy has been an incredible motivating part of my life. It has helped me personally, professionally, with the podcast, learning more about myself, how to improve setting boundaries, working through problems, big and small. It has been the single best tool in my life to better my life. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Overcome your fears with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/andyscrolls today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/andyscrolls. It's Andy's Girls. I couldn't head in to the great unknown, also known as the surgical ward at Lenox Hill, without talking about two shows that just aired live episodes that were both honestly good, solid. Solid is the dream. And I feel like we're in solid to solid plus eras, at least this week. It's the Eras Tour for New York and Potomac. So I just wanted to share a couple thoughts before I scrub myself with some sort of, I don't know, it's like a thing with the stuff to clean and disinfect yourself. Really looking forward to that. But before I do, I needed to clean my mind. Just a couple thoughts. And also, per usual, because I am continuing to cough in my, speaking of eras, post-pneumonia era, I am not able to have any cough drops right now because that counts as food. And God was like, let's make this your last episode pre-surgery as complicated as humanly possible in which to record. And I said, Manolo Blahnik, I've got you. So had a couple thoughts. Honestly, I really want to talk for a hot second about New York because I just looked at Uba's behavior and I thought to myself, thank you. Thank you, ma'am, for your service. Thank you for not letting anyone get away with anything. And while she was focused on Bryn, she also criticized the group as a collective, which I appreciated. And God only knows, in watching that trailer, I really kind of thought to myself, self, are pigeons actually gonna be a thing? I couldn't really tell. The trailer was so focused on them in a way that was like an intentional punchline that I figured someone is going to say something dumb, but it's not necessarily going to make any sense. But I actually appreciated what Uba was communicating, which is that the group feels like a round of messenger pigeons without the right address, which I honestly thought was a pretty astute observation that they're all playing a game of telephone and it's really fucking annoying. And it's impacting how Uba herself wants to contribute to the group, which is genuinely a serious concern. If she does not feel comfortable opening up, I mean, I know that the responsibility ultimately is on her, but if she doesn't feel comfortable opening up, then that's a really big fucking problem. Also, when you sign up for any of these shows, I feel like a part of the scope of work is that your words are going to be manipulated, most likely intentionally, to cause some sort of dramatic series of moments. But that doesn't mean that you need to be okay with that. And you certainly can acknowledge it when it's taking place. And I felt like the most recent episode of New York did a really good job of at least showing Uba's frustration. And what I really appreciated is that she didn't let it go. Because I felt like Brynn's number one goal with Sai initially, and then honestly after, was to skirt over any possible details of accountability and just be like, you know, we already talked about this, so don't worry about it, but I apologize in advance. Like, she literally said, in all the ways that I hurt you, which I think you've expressed to me, I'm sorry. That is, I think actually she even began it by being like, you know, I don't want this to be very long. I want it to be quick. Of course you do. You don't want to get into the details. And I actually thought Brynn also had a strong episode. But in that moment, I feel like I could see her trying to manipulate the situation in a way that I feel like most people probably would, myself included, of like, we don't really need to get into all of the things that I maybe did to you, but we can just tie this up in a bow and keep moving on. I mean, you're filming this in front of a camera crew. I'm sure she doesn't necessarily want all of her bad behaviors recognized. And maybe she's also someone who does not want to have those kinds of conversations. Like, she's very focused at points on policing people's reactions and feelings, but not necessarily in understanding where those feelings are coming from. Like, she, I thought later in the episode, and certainly with Sai, honestly, was like, you know, we can be classier. We don't need to swear. We don't need to have raised voices. But do you understand why people have voices raised? First off, Brynn's frustration language is not everyone's. So that's number one. Number two, she's responsible for, I mean, her role in this. And I feel like she doesn't have any interest in like bridging that gap, which I understand per Uba and Sai can be really fucking frustrating. And I honestly have to say, whomever Sai has onboarded as her therapist should get a nice, healthy Christmas bonus, because I am seeing active work in Sai. Like, this is not the remotional new beginning. I'm so sorry. I just need to kind of cut you off. Let me talk to you about my childhood trauma in the woods before I, you know, board a helicopter to go to somebody's private party. Like, this is someone who I think is actively doing the work, and we can see it. And we can see it in Uba too. The end of the episode, pineapple as the conflict safe word of like, when I feel like you're having a little bit too much of a moment, I'm going to say this thing and we're going to calm down, worked. I thought that was actually very successful and also funny, because the rest of the group is trying to figure out what the fuck pineapple means and who is being insulted with the use of a possibly derogatory fruit. Like, I found myself really nodding along, even though I didn't agree with everything Uba was saying. I really appreciated her actually saying stuff where she's like, this is ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. This feels super toxic. And I don't think that Brynn is as adorable as she might believe that she is, and as many people in the group treat her, where it's like, oh, she's kind of innocent in this. You know, maybe she doesn't mean well, but we'll let her get away with it because otherwise it's just maybe too much of a mess. Uba's like, I'm okay with it being a little bit of a mess. I think it, in fact, needs to be a little bit of a mess. And, you know, when Brynn and Sai are having that conversation and Sai is saying, you know, whenever someone starts a response by being like, I appreciate your perspective, that is a really wonderful way of saying, I appreciate your perspective, or I appreciate your perspective. And also, you can truly go fuck off. And Sai, using the language, I guess, that Brynn appreciates, says, you know, thanks for the blanket apology, but we need to be more specific, which was not something Brynn wanted to do, which led to an escalation. And then this is where it could have ended. Brynn came over, they did the hug. There was like the lunchbox thing, which I don't think was ever actually explained. They had the moment, everyone's ooing and aahing and cooing, like, oh, the friends who were, you know, on the outs made up, and they did the thing that Brynn wanted to do from the beginning, which was have a makeup that did not involve specific details and be able to move forward and keep it moving. And at that point, I honestly kind of thought it might be over, but I was thankful that Uba was like, no, I'm just getting started. Noting that later in the episode, when Brynn calls her a spokesperson, that's a valid critique. Like, whose battle are you fighting right now? Are you mad at me? Are you mad at me because I maybe treated Sai a different way? If Sai has a problem with me, she should communicate it. It's not your responsibility to be in charge of her battle, which is an absolutely valid, understandable response. And I feel like her, Uba's perspective, I just genuinely feel like is so spot on. And as she said, I think as she said, Brynn doesn't want to be on the front line of conflict. She really doesn't. She doesn't want to be the one. She has a whole fucking dog and pony show of like, don't swear, be smarter, use your words. But also don't pretend that you don't, first off, relish in this and also are responsible for creating an environment where people are easily upset because they're annoyed, because they feel like you're getting away with shit and maybe they're not communicating it in the nicest, quietest way. But that doesn't mean that their frustration doesn't have validity. Oh, God, I love a double negative. Really, truly, I feel like Brynn is a little bit of a sniper from the side. And I would think she would acknowledge it if she was in the mood. I just don't know if she actually is and what this means. Like, I guess this is the thing that's going to set up the rest of the season. I do feel a little nervous of the fact that we have already, was that our second episode, third, we've already checked several trailer moments off of the list of things that have already happened. And we're like still in the prologue. So I don't know what that means for the rest of the season. I really love Dream Situation. I really love a trailer where, you know, trailer starts, yada, yada. We see iconic moments and then we actually watch the season. And there's so much that wasn't even hinted about in the trailer that is genuinely a surprise and a delight. I don't know if we're going to get that on New York, because it does feel like any kind of moment with an M has already been highlighted in the season trailer that we've seen. But also, I really thought that this week's episode of New York was interesting. Like, I felt like it was dynamic and I appreciated people having honest conversations. And also the thing that Uba said at the beginning of the episode was, can you tell right now I'm trying to just like camouflage the cough. We're trying to dance around it. We're doing a little pirouette, like London, like Sai's daughter. And I don't know if it's going great. But the thing that I appreciated from the beginning of the episode was Uba talking about her relationship with Oliver, not just like her hesitation about what commitment will look like. I think she said that he wants her to move in. He has like an art room set up for her, an art studio. And she feels, you know, she's hesitating a little bit. But also, I'm sure, you know, in addition to whatever conversation she and Oliver have had about how he's going to be represented on her social media and maybe discussed on the show, whether or not he'll ever appear, she certainly still carries frustration about the fact that she was not in a position where she introduced Oliver to the group. Now, that was her choice. She was dating this man, obviously fell like head over heels for him, did not, as a result of that, want him to be discussed on camera. So when you take a chance like that and you sign up for Real Housewives and you try to keep a secret, it's on you if the secret is told. I mean, at the end of the day, if she wanted to have control over the relationship and was, I mean, it's her first season. So maybe you're meeting these people and you really think that like you can trust them, but I don't know how serious that is, or maybe she just trusted the wrong person who told somebody else. But with Brynn sharing the news that Uba had like fallen in love on camera, Uba could have done that herself, but she didn't want to at that point. And she's obviously still holding on to the fact that like, you did this thing you didn't need to do, and I was kind of the bait for you to have a moment on camera. You knew that I would be upset by this and you just didn't care. And I think that's a valid point. And I don't know, with some of this, I don't know exactly how Uba and Brynn move forward. We've seen the end of the story from the premiere episode. Obviously, they're not fucking with each other when they have the cast photo shoot. I don't know what else happens, or if this animus just like deepens for the rest of the season. But we are getting into, I think, a really interesting area. And I'm curious about it. It was the first episode where I was like, oh, we're having levels right now. I think these women need to go on as many trips as possible. I think Bravo production just needs to increase the budget a little bit, have more little slumber parties, do a little hotel jaunt. I don't really want people like chilling at somebody's apartment. They need to be taken out of their environment. And yeah, a second house works. Like, take them out east, as Brynn said, which is a very astute point. How do rich people talk about having additional second properties without actually saying they have second properties? It's like, are you going out east? That is a thing that happens. That's extraordinarily bougie. But, you know, have the ladies go out east more often. I'm sure we're not going to get the cast trip for a minute, but like, can we take these women outside of wherever and put them in a fucking house? It's like New York needs to have a little Ultimate Girls Trip energy in which to have sparks happen, because otherwise they need to be trapped. We need to have New York Big Brother. Like, they need to be trapped in a house where they can't leave, where they have to interact, and we can see actual ensemble magic. Because I think that is going to be as important and as helpful as seeing these kinds of scenes between, you know, folks in pairs, which I like, but I do also like the group dynamic. And I mean, there were moments where I'm like, what is happening? Jenna, I don't think Jenna was actively lying. I think she really forgot that she had pointed out Brynn at the like Brynn's sort of initiation second season drinks event during the premiere. I think she really truly didn't remember, but that obviously she's still wrong. Like, Sai's memory was spot on. And the conversation, quasi argument between Sai, Brynn, and Jenna was fascinating, because I feel like, well, first off, Brynn is saying, I really didn't tell Jenna that you were talking shit, which is what it is. I mean, Sai is not denying to Jenna that she talked shit about Jenna. She's saying, I think, that Jenna pointing out Brynn, specifically Brynn, triggered her and like released feelings that she already had about Brynn and made her feel like, this person is conspiring against me and I don't appreciate it. And that's what led to her big response. And also credit to Sai for sending that group text that was like seemingly paragraphs long, individually apologizing to people for her behavior. I don't think that that was necessary, but I also think it's an indicator of her growth. And I feel like, speaking of messenger pigeons, that I don't know that Jenna and Bryn really appreciated why Sai was mad, which obviously she was like talking shit about Jenna. But also, here's my question. Who was she talking shit with? I guess everyone else in the cast but Jenna. And then they reported back to her. If I was Sai, I would be like, yeah. And guess what they said in response? I don't think Sai is just calling someone up being like, this is why I think Jenna sucks. And Aaron or whomever else is just like nodding and being like, oh, wow, you really think that? Well, I'm not going to add on to this conversation. Gotta go. And then reports back immediately to Jenna saying, here's what happened. I don't know that Sai is the only person who should be blamed for talking shit about Jenna. I also think Sai has shown more growth than anybody else in the cast. And I think Uba is just, to our great benefit, more available. Like, she's more actively involved right now, and she's seeing the forest through the trees. And it's good. I mean, when it comes to like the two cast members who I really appreciate the most in the show right now, I mean, spoiler alert, I think it's Sai and Uba. Although God knows Raquel. Oh my God, I love her. I love her engagement ring. She's the fucking coolest person on the goddamn earth. And hearing about her experiences in art collection, the fact that, you know, she started off, wasn't able to get galleries to work with her because she was a woman of color, regardless of regardless of whether or not the artist was a person of color, and the fact that she kept moving and is now in a position where she was able to transition into being an art advisor. I just think that's so fucking badass. And while it is shameful what she's experienced, and it sounds like there hasn't been a ton of movement in the art world and how it treats collectors of color, minorities on the other side of doing business, I just really am thankful for her voice. And also, people making fun of that goddamn ring in confessionals, I'm like, no, that is chic AF. Like, this woman knows exactly who she is. And I feel like she's living a very specific life. And there is nothing to me as inspirational as that. Like, you know, to my knowledge from what we've seen so far, and not to say that she's not like interested in learning, but like, I feel like Raquel knows exactly who she is and what she wants. And she's had so many different chapters in her life, modeling in the 90s, stepping into the art world, transitioning through the art world, like having a new position, I'm sure growing her business, which, you know, we're going from modeling in the 90s to now. That's a pretty decent gap of time. What, like 15 years? How does that work from 90s to 2024? Something around there, right? 10, 15. I feel like she is, I don't know, she's just someone who is so magnetic. And I know that there are a couple, I know that there are a couple AGs episodes coming out where I'm going to use the word grounded, or my guest will use the word grounded, when we talk about New York, and not in the best possible way. But when I think of Raquel and I think of grounded, that's a compliment. She's maybe the only person right now where if someone uses the phrase grounded to describe her, I'm like, oh, and thank God for that. Like, thank God for that. Also, we got to know Becky Minkoff a little bit more. She tried to use a diva cup and then sneezed, which is my worst nightmare. I haven't had the pleasure. I don't know. I lean more Mary Cosby when it comes to plugging some of those holes versus the diva cup lifestyle. I don't know how frequent that happens, but that is a terrifying possibility that I would think is something that doesn't actually exist. It's just like your worst kind of paranoia, neuroses coming to life, until Becky M is like, yeah, no, it happened. It looked like a murder scene. It was a nightmare because she fucking sneezed or coughed or sneezed. God help us. I've coughed so many times in the last several weeks. That could be a real crisis. As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And like many people, the conversation about saving and investing can feel really complicated. And for me personally, often feels like it's out of reach. Like I'm joining a conversation in the middle of it. I'm not quite sure really how to start, which is why I am so thankful for Acorns. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change, BCC, PK, and Dorit. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. That's perfect for me and my life. I want to make positive change, but so often it's hard to figure out where to begin. Acorns does that work. I always felt like in order to start investing, I needed to have one big lump sum, but Acorns takes away that kind of stress. It's small, important changes that you can make in your life for your future. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. Much like Jennifer Aiden on her last appearance on Watch What Happens Live, and I do mean last, when it comes to summer, I need to keep hydrated, and that's why I love Fiji water. Jen's thirst might not ever be quenched, but with Fiji water, mine always is. Fiji water is Earth's finest water. Unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature soft, smooth taste. And that's why Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S. And P.S., Fiji water has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH. Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick up some today. Alexis Bellino, imagine how much better her season could have gone if she had just simply quenched that thirst. And my recommendation? It's not just water, it's Fiji water. I started taking Hormone Harmony because for me, that time of the month feels like it became the entire month, dealing with cravings, bloating, not feeling like myself. Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. My number one, supporting hormonal balance and regulation. Hormone Harmony also helps relieve symptoms of menopause, improves sleep quality, relieves hot flashes and mood swings. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It is zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndyScrolls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndyScrolls for 15% off today.
And also we heard about moving to New York. I do actually sort of want to know a little bit more about her escaping Florida. She's certainly not the first to have, I mean, lived in, I don't know. I'm just pulling this out of my ass. She might not have, but like Clearwater, does that ring any bells? Was she in that general area? But wanting to leave and, you know, get started on her new life and the way that she was talking about it, I'm like, okay, Becky Minkoff, like great kadoos that you still have the bed frame from when you first got laid, but can we circle back a little bit more to why you needed to leave so quickly? I mean, I think everyone at, or most people, many people at a certain point in their lives when they're a young adult are trying to leave the nest as quickly as possible, fly free. And I am just kind of curious for more details if there's more there to unpack. I don't know. She's quirky. She's definitely quirky. There's something about her where I'm like, oof, I'm not loving it, but I don't need to. I really don't. I don't know what value she's going to really bring to the show, but honestly, she's another body in the room. And that's not a bad thing, or at least it doesn't feel bad right now at this moment. And also, just like as a complete sidebar, the Bottega joke, I really thought that Jenna, whose 1099s have been a constant topic of conversation, at least in the last two episodes, when she gave Jessel that Bottega bag, I was like, oh my God, it's going to be something that's worth $1 zillion. I would be so bitterly jealous if I was anybody else in that fucking room being like, can we, what is this going to be? What did I just lose? Because I didn't have the moment that Jessel did with the frankly beautiful green slip dress. Not the point, but the beautiful item. She didn't feel good in it, and that is what matters. But when she pulled out that Christmas tree outfit, I was like, oh, well done, Jenna. Because I really did think that there was a Bottega moment inside. And I was like, oh my God, what is it? What more gorgeous, expensive item are we going to see? And also, why did everybody bring a gift basket? Why were there 17,000 kinds of items to gift out? And I'm not against all of the women getting beautiful lingerie, because every piece that they were pulling out of the boxes, including certainly Jessel's, were gorgeous, sexy, fabulous. I would expect nothing less from Jenna. But also, if you're not hosting the trip and it's Erin's trip, do we really need to bring all of this other shit to give to people? Because then it is reminiscent of the cast's sort of early days criticism of Jenna of like, why are you giving me all of this stuff? Which I think I remember not loving when they were criticizing her so hard. I'm just thinking like, do we need to, I mean, well, some of you took a helicopter, but everybody else just kind of like drove from Manhattan. Do we need a prize for that? Isn't the prize you guys screaming at each other? That's really the gift that keeps on giving, which I love. So, you know, solid episode, New York. I was into it. I really genuinely was into it, even though at the beginning of the episode, when they were talking about the like, who's on first confusion about Raquel saying, I guess that like Sai and Uba wouldn't let her sit in the front seat, the editors added ominous music underneath that. And I got really nervous because I was like, oh no, if they're doing the, this is going to be a moment and it feels incredibly dumb on its face, we are not going to have a strong app. And then things ended up happening. And I was like, oh my God, New York, good for you. Things ended up happening. And that feels promising. And that is the best case scenario. Speaking of promising, Real Housewives of Potomac. There's a lot there. And I do get into this on upcoming AGs. But just to say, at this point, we're in for, I think, a pleasant ride. There is so much to unpack. Starting at the end, what the fuck, Karen Huger? Deciding that this random, and it said on the invitation, like first annual, I don't even remember what the invite was. Was it a Mother's Day garden party? Did I pull that on my ass? Or like floral something. I don't even remember what the theme was. This is seemingly an event like any other where you get a plaque because why not? Like you're getting an award for just being great. I mean, listen, I'm not against that kind of award nominating process of maybe Karen nominating herself and them, I guess, nodding in return. But there is something so fucking wild about this woman just, you know, moments out of having her birthday lunch and talking about the importance of friendship, but only really when her friends are doing the things that she thinks is appropriate, which is shutting the fuck up, not asking any questions, and supporting her against all our odds, regardless of what comes out in the court. Like, I think that was her upset with Jacqueline, is Jacqueline was like, yes, we're on your side. We're not jumping to any conclusions. Let's just wait and see what the court reveals, which is not what Karen wants. Karen does not want anybody waiting to see what she actually did or what is being argued that she did. She wants people to just blind faith, blind support, have her back. And God help us, she did not have Giselle's. I really felt for Giselle. I feel like Giselle handled it as best she fucking could. Like, she cut to the chase and was like, listen, if you're choosing between these two goddamn events, don't come. But also, you should come. You should go to Giselle's event. Like, I know it's for GNA, which just reminds me of GMA. And then I get confused. And then I just start thinking of morning time broadcasters. But she was doing this event in conjunction with the National Brain Tumor Society. She has just recently lost her father. She's talking about the importance of prevention, information, the hope of finding a cure. This is an event where, you know, donations aren't required, but are certainly requested. And it's also about raising awareness. And it's just, it's her business with Ashley, but it's her business in a way that she's using it to honor her dad. And Karen is like, hey, don't worry about the fact that both of these events are happening at the same time. And I just kind of like made mine happen out of thin air. You can come to both. Who gives a shit that she's getting some fakakta glass award or whatever in the shape of a peony or probably a cherry blossom, which, you know, God bless. We love a theme. Who gives a single fuck? Don't you want this person just is, I mean, in her own fabulous, shady way, is kind of helping you navigate the DUI. Is she throwing some shots along the way? Absolutely. Would Karen expect otherwise? She might, but she would be lying. I thought it was really in wildly poor taste of Karen to make this event of Giselle's and her Karen's conflicting event into a housewives moment. I thought the whole thing with Karen, when it comes to understanding the gravity of the loss of a parent, is not to make light of it and to listen to someone in pain and support them. So did she just not pay attention to the fact that this was going to be focused on Giselle talking about her dad dying? Like, Karen, what the fuck? What are you even doing? It was really, I don't want to say reckless and irresponsible, because I don't want to pretend that there's a pattern here with some of Karen's behavior, but I just thought it was kind of cruel. I just think that there has to be some sort of line, and Karen should know about that line better than anyone else, because she has been so vulnerable and talking about the death of her parents, and we've seen her break down at reunions. We've seen the cost of that pain. We've seen her grief, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, whose idea was this? And also, the transportation was so ridiculous. And in addition to that, what was the point of, I know it doesn't make sense, and I guess that's the point, but having these women like split custody and go to two different events, except some of them didn't go to one or the other, and cameo, like, is that what you really want to do? You're disrespecting Giselle more than Karen, because why aren't you just turning down Karen's invite? You just celebrated her birthday. Like, what is the fucking problem? And new housewife Stacy, I am extremely into. And you could see on her face, I felt like when she showed up at Giselle's event, she was the one talking in the van about like being respectful and what time we have to be there, XYZ. And you could tell she was like genuinely upset and or embarrassed that they were rolling in, you know, as cutting it close with curfew to get in the door before Ashley's like, I'm going to kick you out. I mean, Giselle and what's his name, William, the security guard, were the ones who made that magical moment happen. And it is a little bit of a to be continued. But I don't know. I just feel like Stacey gives me energy of a solid, well-rounded housewife. I feel like she's going to bring a lot of value to the cast in the show. I feel like she fits really well. When she was talking about the experience of, you know, just figuring out how she's going to be navigating this separation and divorce, the fact that they have made the decision not to tell Arabella yet until they have all their ducks in a row. I don't know. That has to be incredibly complicated. And also, I would assume specific to, you know, a couple's like individual child, their age, how they're doing with like emotions, communicating that, wanting to make sure that you have as much information as humanly possible to make the transition as easy as humanly possible, noting that it's obviously, regardless, going to be upsetting and complicated. It feels like they are putting Arabella first. But speaking of Arabella, having a conversation between Stacey and Ashley, talking about their experiences parenting biracial kids and hearing how Ashley identifies the community that she was raised in, trying to create one with her sons, but feeling like what I have are books. I don't necessarily have the people and diversity that I grew up with. Hearing them talk about, I mean, Stacey talking about wanting Arabella to have as much pride in being a Black girl as she has of being German on her estranged husband's side. I was like, holy shit, these are the conversations that are so meaningful. And to me, as a white woman watching the episode, it's just incredibly illuminating. And I'm so appreciative for them having these kinds of conversations on camera, because this is the work and the experience of connecting to housewives that I find really powerful. Like, yes, all of the funny moments, the crazy moments, the conflict, all of that matters to create a universe that feels really interesting, where it's very easy to get hooked. But this is the value. This is the thing that I think the network often relies on to skirt other moments of being like, no, there's a lot here to unpack and a lot of people's experiences that we're able to get into. And I was really appreciative for it. I was like, yes, this is it. But then we go from Stacey talking about Arabella to the fact that she's not fucking. She's with a gentleman she met at work. They showed a photo of him. I want to say his name is TJ. I'm pretty sure I'm wrong. He's a devout Christian. They want to respect that. They're not shtupin before marriage. My first follow-up question is just out of curiosity. I guess none of my business, but I'm going to ask anyway. Have we shtupped before? I mean, Stacey has a daughter, not a question to her. She's respecting his wishes. What's going on there with her fella? And also, Ashley's incredibly appropriate follow-up, I thought, of like, well, at least you're doing some heavy petting, right? And Stacey's response of like, no, because that would be too much. We would be towing the line. I don't know. I respect people's religious views, and I also kind of think for Stacey, you know, it would be her second marriage, correct? I just think physical intimacy is a big part of a romantic relationship. And before you are committing, like, maybe we do a couple heavy pets, like, before we are, not to say you can't abstain before marriage, but I just, I don't know. I think the difficulty there is it can open up some complications after, because as much as you think you know someone, sometimes when we get into the area of like physical intimacy, sex, sexuality, sexual preferences, I mean, there are so many ways that couples can find themselves feeling like, wow, I thought we were more compatible than we are. I just wonder, with some of these kinds of roadblocks, where are we finding ourselves? Like, where is the are we really all in with emotional intimacy? Like, how are you finding connections with each other that feel really deep and, I don't know, kind of different, I would say. And really, truly none of my business, but like, again, if we're not doing heavy petting, are we doing light petting? Like, is there a light to medium before we get into a heavy flow? Can we have something cooking here just so that we have an idea of what this person is like in that way? And how quickly are you guys going to get married? And how quickly is getting married going to be associated with the fact that once you are married, then that opens the door to a shtup, a holy one? How does that affect the timing of all of this? And truly, not to compare this to like TLC content, but I think of like, and I don't know anything about TJ, if that is in fact his name. I'm sure he's a lovely gentleman, but I think about like the Duggars of it all, like, and how there are all of these young people, because there's like 40 or 50 siblings in that family that just keep pop, dozens and dozens of them. I mean, counted by the dozen, where they seem to be getting married terribly young, and some of them may or may not be allowed to hold hands. And courting seems to be giving someone your cell phone number and or them sliding into your DMs. And then it's like, oh, here we are. The path to matrimony hath begun. I just kind of hope that they are, I mean, these are two grown adults. I'm sure they have both experienced things, a lot of things in life. I'm curious as to what his relationship history is like, because I'm nosy AF. So it's truly not a great example. It's really not a valid comparison. It's just the thing that came to mind. And I think he had a moment in the trailer. I can't remember what the line was, but it did make me laugh because he was just so passionate and spirited about something having to do with like sex or something else, where I'm like, oh, he seems like genuinely a lot of fun. Like, his energy was fun to see, and I'm sure we'll see more of him. And Stacey, I hope, you know, noting his devout beliefs, and again, God bless, I hope that she's, you know, expressing herself in her own private time. I think I would assume that doesn't hopefully impact her ability to have a little bit of a break, a moment to herself of deep contemplation. Hopefully that's happening. So, you know, TBD. I really enjoy Stacey so far. I really genuinely do. I feel like Potomac, we are at a good spot. I did think Giselle's, I don't even remember what the exact language was. I think it was just like, William, come hither. I'm kicking these people out. It was giving me a little Heather Dubrow, you can go, please leave. It was giving me a little NeNe in LA when Gandy and the crew showed up like 7.5 hours late to her dinner party, which, if only they had shown up at some point close to on time, because I feel like a Hollywood style dinner party in the hills or wherever the hell they were, a delight. It looked like it would have been a beautiful evening. I'm still upset on NeNe's behalf, but also our own, that didn't actually happen. I'm like, yeah, Giselle, do whatever. They showed up. Ashley gave them a time frame. You didn't. So Ashley deciding, not that she did anything wrong, but like Ashley's opinion of when is an appropriate time for them to show up, even though seemingly every possible option was not necessarily appropriate. Giselle being like, no, go fuck yourself. Like, I'm talking to somebody, but I'm cutting them off to come over to say, how dare you? How dare you disrespect this event? You can go. You're not even really here. You're just cameoing. It's as much a reminder that they didn't respect the importance of the night to her as it is that Karen won. Like, I think that's a BOGO. That's a 2-for-1. It's Karen got this thing. She created a moment. I didn't want to participate in it. I told you guys not to come. Who knows how much of their decision to try to you know, split custody and go to mom and dad's house. That didn't really work. That didn't work out really for anyone, except I guess for Karen, because I think she feels like she came out okay in this. And I don't know. I don't know how that's going to go. I'm not entirely sure. Also, we finally had the moment or beginning moment between Giselle and Dr. Wendy that so many of us thought would never happen, mostly because I just was, you know, fighting to never remember last season as much. Every possible instinct in me is like, don't look back, look to the present and future. We must move forward. You know, I feel like they were talking around, having a conversation. Giselle noted that she feels that Wendy is condescending. Wendy noted that she feels Giselle is policing her response to things that Giselle, in fact, has kind of created with frustrations, with conflict, with feeling alienated from the group. And I feel like they both kind of looked at each other and blinked. And we have progress. We have them sitting down and being like, okay, here's some stuff I don't love. Great. Here's some stuff I don't love. Cool. We're not necessarily going to be able to resolve any of this, but we don't feel like fighting anymore. And we know the audience is really fucking tired. So let's just figure this out. And in order to do that, we need to figure this out together. God bless. These are the small miracles that are happening, that need to happen, that other franchises, I could say, could get inspiration from, but also this came as the result of such a fucking bad season that maybe don't go that far down where this feels like a little bit of a miracle. But also miracles exist. And I was appreciative for it. I was happy for it. Seeing as this is the, I don't know what the order is when the episodes are going to be released, but this is the most recent of the episodes recording pre-surgery. I literally now have to go scrub-a-dub-dub some germs away to prep for mañana, which is also today because it is now technically very, very late at night. But I didn't want to go on what I'll call a hiatus, except it's really not. It's like I'm hoping to come back to recording as quickly as I can, but there are several episodes in the can in the interim. And I just couldn't imagine Potomac airing and New York airing and me still having my body parts in a position where I can speak and move without insane discomfort. And so I had to do it. I was like, you just simply have to record. So I want to thank everybody who slid into my DMs and sent recommendations and you know, just love and some sass and say I am a little nervous, but you know, sometimes in life you don't have a choice and you just find a little bit of comfort in that, that this wasn't something where I was like, I get to decide whether or not this is happening. It's like, no, this is happening and it's happening on this date. So there we are with that. Life is a fascinating magical mystery tour. Speaking of magical mystery tours, this is in no way connected to a magical mystery tour. Have you signed up for the Andy Scrolls Patreon? It's the number one way to support the pod. I did a double episode Satchel Spectacular talking about so many satchels of gold. Couldn't even believe it. So many goodies. Potomac, Orange County, New York, Salt Lake, covered an awful lot. You can listen to those exclusive bonus episodes at patreon.com/andyscrolls and continue to send me your satchels. Because when I am up and at 'em, you know I'm going to record a couple more. So slide into my DMs with your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Cloran Ben-Simone. And let me know. My Instagram at Dame Galley. Please include your first name and town. Otherwise, you will be credited as whatever your first name is at Somewheresville. And Somerville has a pretty decent population. So let me know where you are zesting from, and that will be included in the satchel on that Patreon app. And hope your week is going well. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. I will see you all on the other side and chat with you soon. Bye-bye.